We'll get started. So tell me about now. Do you go by Lee?
I go by Lee. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm named after my dad. So he's also Scott Lee Cooper. So I got Lee, he got Scott.
So. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I teach sixth grade math. I'm a math teacher.
Oh, fun.
I'm a teacher in Colorado Springs. I'm about to start into my fourth year as a teacher. So I'm actually teaching summer school right now. I did that today. So that was pretty fun. And then let's see, I grew up in a small town in Colorado, Buena Vista, Colorado. And then lived a little bit in Greeley. That's where I met my wife. So I've been married for about 3 years. We have a 5-month-old. So he's a lot of fun.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So between him and the dogs, you might hear him in the background, but, you know, that's pretty on par for your videos from what I can tell. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Dogs are fine.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so married about 3 years. It's been really awesome with the new baby. So, I've been telling people I've been rediscovering the world vicariously through him. Yeah. So, you know, he just found his feet and I was like, that's so cool. And he's like putting his foot in his mouth and it's really awesome. So, yeah.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah. So, why I'm here, why I want to talk to you a little
bit.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Yeah. So I have a lot of things. I have some notes around me, just some like different talking points. I guess the first thing that I wanted to do was just to kind of reestablish the pattern of, how did I find you? How did I find Jordan Peterson?
Yep.
Where did that come about? So it actually was around the 2016 election. Trump had won. I was at a very progressive school. I came in the day that, you know, it was announced that Trump had won. And I'm not exaggerating. Like the whole office was tears. Everybody was crying and very upset. The population we served was mostly Hispanic, and basically they were like, everything's over, it's done. Like, and so, you know, it was very traumatic for the people that I was working with. And I didn't know a whole lot. I had never really followed much with politics or religion or philosophy and just kind of had been going with the flow of the culture at the time. So I wanted to know more. So I asked my brother, I want to find out more, like what's going on? Like, what is this really like? You know, some awful racist thing that's happening. And so I kind of got into the political thing of it. And he said, you should listen to this podcast on Joe Rogan's podcast. This guy, Jordan Peterson, you should check him out. So I did. And I checked out that first podcast. And then, you know, from there, I definitely was hooked. Standard, like, you know, went down the rabbit hole and just, you know, full into Maps of Meaning and listening to all those and was listening to them as they were coming out and listening to the biblical series as those were coming out and just very much so hooked. I was actually re-listening to some of it and a quote stood out to me and I kind of want to go, I guess, towards that. But it said, the world of narrative will open up for you. And that's definitely been the case. And like, it's really helped me to map my own problems, to figure out, you know, what's going on with other people and just to have this narrative structure that we're living in. And then, you know, from listening to you, I've also recently been listening to a lot of John Verbeke and just been very intrigued with that. I think that, John Verbeke provides a lot of the, I guess, meat that I don't want to say Peterson glosses over, but you know, that the underlying structure that, the underlying story that I think is sometimes missing there. And then, so that's been very, very helpful for me to listen to John Verbeke. I think Peterson too, when I listen to his stuff, like John Verbeke, for instance, you know, he'll talk about the salience, right? The salience landscape. But he'll just say that, right? He packs his words very tightly, at least for me, like I have to definitely pay attention very closely. Versus Peterson will be like, oh, well, let me tell you about the story of, have you ever seen the gorilla video? You know, he goes through the whole thing. And, you know, but really he's getting at the same point, right? Some things that I guess I just wanted to talk about a little bit. I definitely consider myself a Christian. I didn't always consider myself a Christian. My wife and I have become very involved in our church. We do a lot with the children's ministry. We do a lot with helping with that, on Sundays and teaching and those kinds of things, doing check-ins. So become very involved there. And then, as far as a church journey goes, we just kind of went to the church that was closest to our house to begin with. And we're trying that. And that was when we were living up in Denver. And then we moved down here. We weren't sure what we were going to do. So we actually found, it was a friend of a friend and he had started a church and we ended up going there and they had a podcast series. And I was like, well, I'm in, I'm into podcasts. And they had, it was an apologetic series. So I'd kind of joined into that. But yeah, it was a long journey for me. I guess like really becoming Christian. And I think that as I lived the narrative more, as I, you know, tried to embody it, as I tried to, you know, go to church and, you know, I think I was kind of within that religious fictionalism as they, you know, they talk about, but as I kind of lived it more, I feel like I would say at this point now that God was drawing me closer in, and to the point where I was like, okay, you know, like I'm ready to believe in the, you know, I'm ready to even believe that, you know, he rose again, all that. So it was a, you know, it was a big step for me, but yeah, definitely. And then got baptized pretty recently as well. So yeah, that was kind of, I guess, my journey into things. But, you know, I, like I said,
were you raised a Christian?
So I was raised a Christmas and Easter kind of Christian. Okay. And, you know, there was a period where we did go quite a bit. My mom was, I think, in her own meaning crisis, and she became very much so Christian for a while, but she's definitely not in that anymore. She's very much so, she's very conspiratorial. She gets very into, I mean, we don't have to go deep into that, but, you know.
Best not.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, more of a, but I guess the reason I bring it up is because I enjoy having conversations with her. Okay. And, you know, I still will have like, you know, conversations about Peterson or conversations about something I heard from you, or, you know, so we still are very much so in dialogue with each other, which is great.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. So where do I want to go? I wasn't sure what I wanted to talk about. And I had, like I said, a lot of ideas, but one of the things I didn't want to do was be boring, especially. After... Yeah, I've been very nervous about that with your, yeah, your friend saying, he's like, oh yeah, those conversations are boring. I'm like, oh crap.
He says what he thinks. So that's okay.
But I wanted to actually talk a little bit about, I guess, what did the meaning crisis, cause you know, I'm just kind of looking at this Verbeke lens right now. What did the meaning crisis mean for me? And, why was it so attractive? And, looking at, Peter Pan, really, that's kind of where I want to talk about. So,
interesting.
When I was listening to Verbeke, the first thing that I listened to the music, it's Eric Satie, I think is how you say it, the background music. Huh. That he has to his, you know, the intro music that he has to all of his. Yeah. So I heard that and I just had this like really emotional response to it. And I was trying to figure out why. I was trying to figure out like where I'd heard it before. So I actually heard it in this movie that you probably are not familiar with called Mr. Nobody. It's Jared Leto was the star. Yeah. You know the movie?
I know it a bit. My kids have watched it a few times.
Okay.
Walked in the room and it's like, what's going on with this guy? So I haven't sat down and watched it, but they say it's a great movie.
Yeah, and a lot of people will say, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Oh, it's so deep. It's so meaningful. And as I tried to analyze it more, I realized that it's a Peter Pan story. That's really what it is. And the whole point of the movie, and, you know, this is something I want to kind of get into too, but it's basically a kid who is faced with this difficult decision, and he has to either go with his mom or go with his dad, right? Like, they're getting a divorce. He's a 9-year-old. He's on a railroad track, right? And obviously, you can see the symbolism there. And they say, where is it that you, what are you going to do? You know, who are you going with? And then it kind of shows all these different scenarios of his life. But he, as the 9-year-old, gets to see all these scenarios. He gets to see his future. And he gets to see, you know, all the futures to come. And
he has all these different relationships with these different women, like wife number one or wife number two, wife number three. I remember some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of based on these different decisions that he makes within his life. You know, that he's, whether he's not with this wife or, you know, in some of the scenarios he dies, or in some of the scenarios, you know, and then the final scenario, he's an old man talking through all these scenarios. Right. And so I don't know, that movie was really intriguing for me. And I think it's really intriguing for a lot of people. They see it as this deep movie. But the end of it, it just says there is no right path. And that's kind of the message of the story, that there is no right path. Any of the paths can have been a good path. And, you know, I think that messaging is definitely Peter Pan messaging, right? It's the reason that he's called Mr. Nobody, and the reason, you know, he explains it at the end of the movie, is because he doesn't choose his damn sacrifice, as Peterson says, right? He doesn't pick his sacrifice, and he's just that little boy stuck at the railroad station trying to make the decision. Now, I want to go back to that part because, I mean, as a child, having to make that decision, like, that is, you know, it creates this, like, I would, you know, I want to call it, I'm a math guy, like a singularity in that kid's life, right? Like, that's a decision that a kid shouldn't have to make, right? That kids shouldn't have to take on that responsibility. But, you know, as adults, I think that you have to watch that movie differently as an adult. But, you know, like, for people who are watching that maybe had divorced parents, they're not watching it as the adult, they're watching it as that kid on that track, and they're feeling his emotion. And actually, when he's making that decision, that's the same music, and that's what I was saying, I had that emotional response, that John Verbeke uses in his background. It's actually a little bit of a different version, but it's the Eric Satie music, right? And that's where I was like, okay, that's where I remember that from. That's where I have that emotional response. So, I mean, the movie poses this question, though, is how do we make difficult decisions? And, you know, I think kind of the answer that the movie gives is, again, that there is no right path, and that we have to kind of make reasons for ourselves, right? And that you just kind of choose something and you make a good reason about why this is good. And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, that's not good enough, right? And this is where I really enjoy what I'm listening to with John Verbeke and him talking about features and the gestalt, right? The structure, like what is the structure that we're talking about? And it's like, that structure is not good enough for me, right? Like it's too random. There's too much, just whatever. You just choose the path and you make the best of it. How can we have a better structure? And then so I was like, okay, so how do we make good decisions? And so I was kind of going down that path and I was thinking, how have I made decisions? And I think, like, honestly, it goes back to Jordan Peterson's with his self-authoring, right? And that for me was extremely useful. That's something that I did. I actually did the whole self-authoring suite. I did the past authoring, the present authoring, and the future authoring. And, you know, from that, I actually recently, this last semester, I got a master's degree. You know, we had a baby. I tried to set myself up better financially, you know, all these things that kind of lined my life up. And it's like, that's how you make hard decisions, right? Like through this, for me, you know, through this, this planning of the future and that future authoring program, like, I know I feel like I'm advertising for it, but that's really what it is, right? Like you have to plan out your future and plan out your future for yourself and for the people around you. And then that's how you make those hard decisions is, you know, how is this going to line up with that plan that I have? And it's not just about me and what reasons I can make for myself, but how is this going to be good for my family? How is this going to be good for my community? So, and you know, the other huge part that I guess I'm missing here that I think definitely needs to be said is the aspect of choice and the aspect of, you know, what Verbeke talks about with the God of the open future, that, you know, I kind of look at Mr. Nobody now and I'm like, no, that's crap, because the futures, all these different futures that he could see, it's like, it's not defined. The future is open and we get to define that through our choices. And that for me was extremely empowering. I think just, you know, listening to Peterson, and that for me was what I guess I needed to hear, is that, you know, it's not just some path that I just have to make the best of, but it's like, no, you get to forge that path and you get to forge that path. You know, and right now I'm thinking, you know, with Christ and with his plan, you know, so that was just very empowering for me. Yeah. And helped me to, I guess, come out of that meaning crisis and, you know, to stop being the Peter Pan, to live the narrative, to take on responsibility, all those things, right? Like to have that idea that I could forge the future.
So if someone hasn't seen the Verbeke video and they heard you say this, they say, well, this meaning crisis, well, what exactly is the meaning crisis? Especially given how you've laid it out with Mr. Nobody and what then is the meaning crisis? I mean, for Peterson, it's very much a function of, I mean, if you listen to Peterson, he'll say, you know, make a goal, pursue a goal. And it's in the pursuit of the goal, not even in the attainment of the goal, right, but it's in the pursuit of the goal that you will experience meaning. And that's true. But Mr. Nobody, part of it is that, well, you know, he doesn't decide. And so maybe there's no meaning in that, but it's, I mean, part of, I think, built into that, and I haven't watched the movie, so I probably don't have it right, but the message that there is no right path, that isn't necessarily contradictory to Peterson's goal-oriented, meaningful experience. Because in a sense, Peterson, he doesn't really say this, and I think, and it would be unfair to say, any goal is good. You know, he would very much say there are some goals that are better than other goals, and you can pick that. And in that sense, he's not that far away from Sam Harris. But you know, when you wish upon a star, well, do you know which star you should wish upon?
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And I guess for myself, as far as, you know, I don't know, I'm not as, you know, learned as I wish I was. I'm trying to, but, you know, as far as, like,
you can't, you don't, you haven't had time yet.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah. So,
learn by your mistakes, trust me.
Yeah, so I think it's hard for me to define what, you know, cause going to your original question, like, how would I, you know, kind of look at the meaning crisis in that way? And how would I define that for myself? And, I don't know. I think I feel it more in, like, you know, little elements of what I can see going on. And, you know, I guess this indecisiveness, that is a big part of it for me, that, like, you know, we just are in this feeling of being stuck and we don't know where to go or how to get there or why we want to go, you know, like, why are we trying to get somewhere? I just think about, like, I don't know, even little things. So, like my sister, for instance, like she has eeny, meeny, miny, mo, right? For what she wants to decide. And it can be something really little, like, what pair of shoes am I going to wear? And she just can't make that decision. And she, you know, she has to kind of do that. And so, I don't know. It's like, we do need that guiding light, right? So we need that, I guess, that something to move towards in order to, so I guess I'm looking at it, you know, in a very pragmatic sense, like that Peterson does, right? Like, how is it that we're going to be able to live in the world in a way that's not just, you know, we're not stuck, but I guess the reason of, like, why are we doing that? At this point, you know, where I'm at, I guess I just tack on, and I don't want to diminish it, but for me, I'm like, okay, how am I bringing glory to God? You know, that's kind of where I've been now. And how am I, you know, like, I guess, how am I following scripture in that way? And that's what I'm, I guess, you know, trying to move towards and trying to learn more about.
Right. Well, and I think, yeah, you know, so again, I've said this in a number of places and I continue to refine my saying of it. The definition of a good culture is that it enables people to make better choices than their age affords them. And so, you know, I think, you know, when I just listened to your short autobiography, you know, I very much affirm you've decided to take on, in a sense, what you do when you decide, okay, I'm going to become a Christian. And that's you very much, okay, this is a choice that you're making. I'm going to become a Christian. I am going to attend a church. I am going to, and what you do in a sense is you take on all of these presets and you say, to the degree that I'm able to, this is the way I'm going to pursue my life. And mm-hmm. So you met a woman, you fell in love, you made a commitment. You got married, you had a child, you took on a vocation, you got education, and in many ways, as a young man, in my opinion, you've set yourself up well, because the decisions and the commitments that you've made now, you don't know. Here's the thing, and as you get older, you'll learn this, because you and your wife over the next 30 years will continue to change. Your, mm-hmm. Is it a son or a daughter?
Son, yeah.
Okay, a son. Your son, boy, your son is going to change fast. And the difference between a five-month-old and an eight-month-old, you're going to be like, wow. And then an eight-month-old to a year-old, you know, eight-month-old, he'll start crawling. It'll be, oh, now you're going to look at the house in a whole new way. Okay, we got to kid-proof the house. And then he'll be upright and start toddling and go from one to two to three to four, and it's just going to go whoosh. And so what's going to happen is that even though you've set a lot of goals as you go, some of those goals are going to be like, that one's not right, or we can't hit that one. And mm-hmm. so the smaller goals, and so in a sense, the big goals and big commitments that you've made are actually going to put you in a direction, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you have decided to do this in community with a church, mm-hmm. you know, in relationship to others, in my opinion, those are all really good decisions, and they're better decisions than you can make now, because you just really haven't had time, and there's actually no way to know enough,
right,
to achieve the outcomes that you think you want. And that's sort of what life does. And
And well, I think even the reasons why, right? Like even the deeper understandings of why, which I'm trying to map out more, I'm trying to embody more.
Yep.
I just know that it has, you know, definitely improved my life and it has brought meaning to my life. And I think, you know, I'm still trying to figure out, okay, but why, you know, why is this still really good? And you know what you're saying, you know, in your opinion, it is a good thing. And I'm trying, you know, to continue to, I guess, like really embody, why is this a good thing? Why should I continue down this path? Right.
So I'm planning on talking to John Vervaeke this week. And one of the things that I'm going to send him an email maybe after this and say, these are some of the things he said, well, whatever you want to talk about, this fine. Yeah. It's very, I really appreciate it.
It's too open. Spirit. Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things is that there's a real sense now that the religious path is unavailable to people. And I deeply appreciate that because I talk to a number of people, and you can see them on my channel, for whom, you know, the idea of belief, it's a bridge too far. But I certainly don't believe that it's not available to anyone. And the reason I don't believe it's not available to anyone is because you're living proof that it's available to you. Mm-hmm. And whereas people will say, well, that some of this isn't justifiable or defensible, I certainly don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. And I actually do think that a lot of the decisions that you've made at your stage in life right now, beginning a career, beginning a family, beginning a marriage, it's just full of meaning. Now, 10, 15 years into this, meaning will begin to change probably and morph, because things will come up in your life that you'll be like, I didn't plan on this. Mm-hmm. And some of these things will be negative, and then you'll have to adjust. But one of the beautiful things is that, and I think Peterson is right in terms of this experience of meaning, some of those heavy burdens, some of those heavy crosses will find you. And they will not be, the definition of crosses is often, you know, things we must bear but don't really want to bear. Mm-hmm. And of course, Peterson would say, you know, what we try to do often is avoid them. And Peterson is right, is that no, don't avoid them. Face them square on, pick them up, and wrestle with them. And that's really good advice. So the Peter Pan aspect is really interesting, because Peter Pan, in a sense, is the opposite of the Peterson admonition.
Mm-hmm.
Because he looks at the scary future of the boy becoming a man and says, no. And even never, never land, you know, it's mm-hmm. no time. And of course, Captain Hook has, you know, he's terrified of the crocodile with the ticking clock.
Tick, 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 tick.
You know, there are a lot of symbolism in that story.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I definitely tied it into that movie too, with the Mr. Nobody, because, you know, that is it, right? Like, he is nobody, and Peter Pan, like, you know, he is nobody, right? Like,
yes.
And that's where, I really like listening to Akira the Don's stuff too. When he comes out with it, it just, yeah. But he had one recently that was actually on Peter Pan, but yeah, you know, it was Peterson talking about that, where he says, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, you can be anything, you can be anybody, but you're not anything, and you're not everything, yes. Right? Like, at this point, you are nobody, but all you are is potential, yes. But unless you actualize that potential, right, like, yes. That's all you are, you're just nobody.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that really kind of struck me as well.
And the strange things that will happen is, now, you made a commitment to a specific woman. You've mm-hmm. had a specific child. You're working a specific job. Mm-hmm. You live in a specific place. You go to a specific church. All of that potential in time begins to manifest in specific things that then both limit and cut off certain potentials. The mm-hmm. Mr. Nobody, if you had married these other women, well, things would be different. The child right. would be different. But all of those specifics then manifest in new potentials that yeah. it's a fascinating, fascinating thing that this life
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Well, and I want to say freeing in some ways, right? Because I want to go back to, you know, something that my wife and I just really like listening to and will often share with people. And, you know, there's a little clip of it, but it's Peterson talking about marriage. And then, you know, he starts out like, that's why people get married, you know, and he goes through the whole, you know,
I love that clip.
It's a great clip. Yeah. So, you know, I've watched that over and over, you know, and it just, I really, you know, believe in that, and, you know, and that there is a very much so like a freeingness within the unity of marriage, right? That I'm not leaving you no matter what. So let's be free to be ourselves. Like, you know, I don't want to say be ourselves, sorry, but let's be free to open ourselves up to each other, right? To be able to share, you know, share the thing that, you know, that goddamn thing that came up, of, you know, however long ago, you know, and be able to share those things with each other, and to know that, you know, that person is there with you, and that you do have that structure. And the same thing with the church, right? Like that you're committing yourself to that church, so that way you can, you know, open yourself up. I don't know. I don't want to sound like buzzwords, but emotionally, right? You're opening yourself up into your story, to your narrative, to, you know, to be able to, I guess, you know, not wall yourself off, but, you know, be vulnerable in that way. So, although, you know, there are those boundaries, it is freeing in that way.
Yeah. It's both freeing and, then eventually the crosses come. And what's beautiful about that, and this is something that our culture in how it defines self, how it imagines self-actualization to be, which is, you know, somehow I always get what I want and enjoy in every moment as it goes forward. You know, what happens with those commitments is that you get placed into hard things come into your life that you can't change. And then what that gives you is, in fact, the kind of muscle that carrying heavy crosses up the hill actually produce. And this then becomes a differentiation, because a lot of people throw down the cross or stay at the bottom of the hill and say, it's too hard, it's too heavy, I'll go find something easy somewhere else. But it's exactly those things which are the fruit of the things you're taking now, mm-hmm. that in the future actually turn you into a person of substance. That's such an interesting phrase. Mm-hmm. And in terms of Christianity, it's those things that make saints. And in, you know, what we ought to aspire to as Christians are to become saints. The problem with becoming saints is that the path to sainthood is a path that nobody really wants, or sometimes even willfully chooses, but it's a path of binding. That is the story that we are born into and encouraged to pursue. So,
yeah.
No, and Peter Pan will never be a saint.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. So I have a notes. I didn't want to be too prepared, but I wanted to, you know, have substance as well. So.
It's good. Don't be boring.
Yeah. Don't be boring. That was the goal. So I actually wanted to talk real quick, because I'm a very proud father, about my son. So Samuel, yes. I named him Samuel, and part of where I got Samuel from, I want to say that it was purely biblical. I mean, mostly it was like me and my wife looking at some biblical names and going, oh, let's go with Samuel. And it's actually really cool right now, because our church is actually going through 1st and 2nd Samuel and reading through the book. And so that's been really enriching for me. But I actually chose it based on a book that I really enjoyed, East of Eden. So a lot of where I live my world and my life is through narrative, right? Is through looking at different stories. Like I was, you know, talking about Mr. Nobody or Peter Pan, or I'll, you know, I'll constantly think about how does this relate to these, you know, like the Lion King, or how does this relate here? But, it was definitely, a really impactful story for me, East of Eden. And one of the things in there, I don't know how actually biblically accurate this is, but the thou mayest, right? Like, the Tim Shell line in there. I don't know if you know the book or remember the book. It definitely goes through, you have the good father, you have all these, you know, archetypal structures within the book, and Samuel being the good father, but also, you know, I was listening to Peterson, something that he said in there, was you know, you want to be the good father, but you also want to be the hero. You also want to be the son, right? And it's like, you got to embody both of those things at the same time. You know, and so that's kind of like, I guess, where I'm at in my journey, right? Like, I'm trying to, how am I going to be the good father, but also be, you know, embody this other archetype? And how am I, you know, living that out? And I don't, it just really, I guess, helped me too. And like in the book, and as I read it more and like, you know, kind of analyze the character of Samuel, you know, he is the you know, throughout the story, he is this hero character. He's this great hero character, but also this good father at the same time. And, you know, at the very end of the book, he has this point where his kids kind of derive a plan for him where, you know, he's basically going to live out his days by bouncing from kid to kid. And, you know, they're like, one of the sons feels really bad about that because, you know, he doesn't want his father to become complacent. He doesn't want him to become, you know, not this great hero that he sees him as. And what's really awesome, and I think just, I really like how Steinbeck just wrote it, is that the, you know, Samuel, the father, he realizes the plan and he confronts his son about it. He says, Tom, like, you know, there's tomfoolery going on here. Like, I understand what's happening. And, but it's, you know, like, I'm going to choose that and, you know, it's okay. And I, you know, like, I'm going to go into that place. I'm going to become that just, you know, that father. And then, you know, he ends up like later in the book, kind of becoming this ghostly figure, you know, like all three are there, right? Later in the book, Tom is like talking to him and, you know, he's having this deep, moral conundrum within himself, and he's talking to his father who's not there anymore, you know what I mean, and being guided by his father, you know, the spirit of his father, and just, I don't know, so it just was really impactful for me to see that just in a narrative, and then when you think about that as like, okay, and then there's really the Father, there really is Christ, there really is the Holy Spirit, and seeing those, you know, how all three of those can be one, you know, and talking about things as, sorry, I'm getting a leg cramp. it's hard staying hydrated. How things can be separate, you know, like these all, they can be differentiated, but one all at the same time. And, you know, I've been just really enthralled by that idea as well recently. And yeah, I don't know. So that was just something that just thinking through that and being able to talk through that, it's awesome. I don't know good words for it, but
yeah. So why Bath and not English? You certainly have a love of story.
Oh, so I want to take a stab at your question. Why do you get people who have math and who have art?
Yes, you know, yeah, I'd love to know.
I want to take a stab at it. And I think that Verveke helped me this is my theory, and you know, maybe people in the comments can agree or disagree, but I think it really goes to this idea of scaling up and scaling down. And the idea of features and the gestalt, right, that he talks about, that, you know, and you've mentioned in your videos too, like, how do you describe a bird? Okay, like, it has a beak, it has wings, you can throw it in the air, but is that a bird? No, because you don't have the gestalt, you don't have the eidos, you don't have the structure of that, right? So when I think about that, and I think about myself, I consider myself a craftsman. So, for instance, one of the things, and this kind of goes back to some of the other things we talked about, you talked about baby proofing. So my wife wanted me to build like a bench that goes over our the fireplace. I can't think of what it's called right now. Not the mantle, but the part below, right? Can't think of the name. But you know, to go over that, so that way, but because it's open stone, and we want to make sure that our son's safe and everything like that, right? So I drew out a plan. I did the measurements. You know, I have the structure. I have this in my head. And then I go to the store and I buy the wood and I build it. And it was the first time I had ever upholstered anything, you know, so I did all that. I put the foam on, I upholstered it. And, you know, like it was this project that I was working towards and I had so much meaning towards it. And it's like, okay, well, partly, you know, that project was so meaningful for me because it's like, okay, here I'm, you know, and like being able to have that future off thing that I put together, these goals that I put forth, I'm like, okay, I'm serving my wife, right? Like I'm serving her because one, she wants more seating and she wants to protect our son. Like I'm serving my family because I'm protecting my son. I'm helping my community because I'm, you know, creating more seating in our living room and we can invite people over and they can have seating here. And I'm also fulfilling my hobby of building things and putting this structure together. So, you know, within the material, right? You have the material object that I built that I, you know, like you can describe the features, but I know the gestalt, I know the structure, I know the flaws, I know exactly how it's put together, I know how it was like why it holds up, because I know every crossbeam and everything like that. I know the screws that went into it, right? I have that structural element within me. And then I also, right, in the more the psychotechnology part of it, like going into the metaphysical, I also, you know, found meaning in it because of how it was nested within, what I want, you know, it's nested within the things that are bringing me meaning. Okay. So how does that relate to the math and the art, right? So, well, one, like, I think that there is a lot of math and there is a lot of art in that, right? Like, I did have to do, and you know, this is kind of rudimentary geometry art, math, that I was doing, just measuring things out and whatnot. But, I think that there's an element there. And then there's also the artistic element of it, right? And so if I'm going to take a stab at it, I will say that the artist, right, they don't, like, the artist who is creating the picture, they're not just seeing the features, right? They know the structure. They know what went into it. They know every brushstroke. They know every mistake. They know why that little, why that pretty bird is there, you know, because of that mistake that they made or whatever, right? Like they have that structure, and it's that going from the feature to the structure and to the, you know, to whether you're just even talking about the material, right? The material structure, or you're talking about what other kind of deeper meanings are behind the picture, you know, what does this image represent, you know, but it's going between those different levels of abstraction, or those different levels of, I guess, even just structure, right? And I really enjoyed that word gestalt. I've been saying it a lot. So
it's a fun word.
It's a fun word. Yeah. So, okay. And then you think, well, how does math exactly come into this? Because I haven't talked about math enough, right? So for myself, when I think about math and I think about, it is a lot of that. It is a lot of taking a problem, right? So when I think about here, you're going to be introduced to quadratic formulas for the first time, okay? I don't know how much you remember of your math, but I think that you said you at least know some algebra. So that's good.
No, I went all the way through calculus and differential equations, good. Abstract algebra. I did a lot of math in college.
Oh, yes. I remember you saying you got to abstract algebra.
And said, no, this isn't for me. I'll do
this. I got to abstract algebra and I was like, this is for me.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
I'll get back to that because this is a thought I just had. So remind me to come back to abstract algebra. But when I think about algebra, okay, just algebra in itself, and you are introduced to a quadratic equation for the first time, and you are told different ways to solve this. Okay, well, at the beginning, you know, you have some features, and it's numbers and it's letters, but it's like, no, those numbers and letters have structure. Those numbers and there is an underlying structure. And if you're given an equation, you can find a solution to that equation. Okay, so you have a solution to that equation, and now that you have that solution, you have more structure. And you kind of understand this equation more because there's more meaning to that equation. It's not, there's no solution. It's like, oh no, it maybe has one solution or has two solutions, or, you know, it does have no solutions, but you're getting more of the structure of this equation, this quadratic equation. Okay. And then as you find out more quadratic formulas and you solve more quadratic formulas, you know, there is this point of abstraction where you say, okay, how do I solve quadratic formulas in general? What is the, you know, like, how do I abstract this problem to a formula? And that, you know, so for instance, the quadratic formula, that's what it's called, right? So here's the formula that you can use to then solve these problems, right? Like, this is the overarching formula that solves these problems. And I think that math has a lot of that, right? So, and that's how often you'll teach math. So when you teach about the Pythagorean theorem, you don't say, here's the Pythagorean theorem, at least you shouldn't, right? You say, here is triangles. Here is this measurement, here's this measurement, here's this measurement. Let's look at these measurements squared and, you know, let's try to abstract out a pattern, right? So you're going from features, you're going from this, you know, like the lower level features to, okay, I'm going to figure out what is the higher structure? How can I abstract this problem, get to the gestalt, right? How can I get to the quadratic formula? How can I get to a squared plus b squared equals c squared, right? Like, that is the structure that is holding all of these right triangles, you know, that they all share, right? And then when you talk about abstract algebra, then you're not just talking about numbers and you're not just talking about formulas, but it's, okay, well, why, you know, where, well, I guess, you know, you're abstracting even further. And it's been long enough that I can't make a good enough, can't talk through a good enough example, but, you know, that's really what it is, right? You're continually kind of abstracting back and back to where now you're not just solving this one math problem. You can solve any of those problems, you know, like any of those problems, if you know the overarching structure, you can solve all the problems. And then you just, you know, you keep abstracting up. So that for me is, I would say, that's where I see it. That's where I see this connection between why are people in math really, like, you know, being drawn to the videos? Why are people who are art being drawn to the videos? And, you know, because that's what Peterson did for me. He took these features, he took these stories, he took, you know, these Disney stories and, you know, these hero's journey and whatever, and let's step it up and let's go to this other point of abstraction. Let's look at let's look at the archetypes and how do these archetypes manifest in other places? And how are we solving not just, you know, the problem of the snake, the one snake problem, but we're solving the problem of snakes, right? Where we're going to this bigger, how are we solving these bigger problems? And so I guess Verveke really helped me to see that connection by looking at, again, the features and the gestalt and how are we abstracting up. And I know he talks about opacity and transparency within that as well, right? But I've more so been focused on that aspect. But that's my stab at it. I don't know. You can tell me I'm wrong.
What does that have to do with my videos? I mean, it's an honest question. People kind of chuckle when I say, because I don't mean to disrespect my audience, but there are many times when I honestly don't know why. I'll make a video and I'll think, I'm like, I just spent 2 hours making it. I don't want to delete it. That'd be a waste of 2 hours. So I'll throw it out there and I'll give it a crappy thumbnail and I won't give it a good title and maybe folks won't watch it.
I still listen to them all.
But see, the fact that artists and you know, I really like what you just said in terms of Peterson. I think that's really helpful. But I don't find a whole lot of math or art in my videos. And yet math, musicians, artists talk to me. Just because they can talk to me and they can't talk to Peterson. I mean, that's part of it. I know, but I don't know.
So, okay, I'm going to say... I'm just going to take some stabs at this and people can tell me I'm wrong if I am, but I'm going to say that you're getting too focused on the feature, that you're saying, okay, math and art, like what's going on? I don't talk about math. I don't talk about art. Yeah. But that idea that, you know, like what people who are very, you know, for myself in like, that are, very, fine. I like math. I don't know how to say it better. I like math and I do like art and I like, you know, solving equations and I do like creating art. You know, it's more about, I guess, that I'm taking it to a different level of abstraction where just that idea of abstracting. And I like that. I like going from the features to the abstract and back.
So looking at the patterns, let's say, instead of the particulars.
Yes, yes. And I think that, you know, so why do I listen to your videos? Why am I, you know, like, why do I...
You even went as far as to want to talk to me, so...
Yeah, exactly. yeah. So I think, you know, part of it is that, you know, like why I... And actually, I really enjoy listening to these conversations. And I guess that's why I wanted to put my, you know, my two cents
in. Oh, that's great. You don't find it boring at all.
Yeah, I'm like, these are great.
See, the boring part, that's part James's problem. And he probably won't listen to this, so I can say that. So don't worry about that.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I like seeing the patterns of people's journey. I like, abstracting out what is common across these people who are in his channel besides, you know, cults and, and math and, you know, whatever else. Yeah, and art, I enjoy trying to map out because I know myself, I was, you know, brought into this. And I guess part of it is trying to understand myself more and, you know, what can I glean from these other people and, you know, what their journeys are. So, you know, I think that's part of it. And I think that what you're doing in your videos, you know, when I listen to them, is you're helping me. You know, for instance, I really like your Rough Draft for Sundays as well. You know, that's something I like to listen to quite a bit. But I you know, I think for me, you're helping me to, I guess, define the, you know, you're helping me to fill in the missing gaps that I have, right? And sometimes no, because sometimes I listen to some of your conversations or listen to some things you're saying, I'm like, I didn't get any of that. You know, but it does, it's helping me to connect between Peterson and, you know, the narrative that I'm trying to embody, the Christian narrative that I'm trying to embody. Yeah. And it's helping me to, you know, fall more into that narrative and to live out that more and to see these connections and to, I'm having a hard time, you know, talking about it in a way that I wish I could be more specific about, but, you know, I think that's really it. Like it's helping me to, map out this more abstract, realm that I just had never taken part in before. Yep. Right. The philosophical, the psychological, the theological realm that I just, you know, for most of my life, I was very material and just going with the culture, like I said. So, you know, helping to, and it's like, okay, so then how is that helping me? Because one, I mean, I think it helps to fill in that gap of why am I doing these things? And, you know, why am I interested? And, you know, why did Peterson have such an effect on me? And why, you know, why do I feel I'm being so drawn into Christianity and that I want to, you know, keep living out that narrative? So, it's been very helpful in that way.
Well, I think patterns, you know, and I, you know, you talking about this has kind of helped me understand mathematicians a little bit better and part of what motivates us to math, because it is an abstraction but it's a patterned abstraction. And so if we can identify and know the pattern over here, and we can see some of the underlying patterns. And this does get into Gestalt, so I get to say it too, which is fun. It is a fun word. I like saying Gestalt. It sounds so European when I say Gestalt. But if you recognize the Gestalt, then you can begin to play with it and say this, and maybe, you know, theme and variation. And with math, it's like, it's, you know, here's the pattern. And and it's enormously powerful because it's predictive. And so my second son is an engineer, and that's, you know, the power of applied math, that you can say this bridge will hold this. He's actually working in a wastewater treatment plant, a major upgrade to the city wastewater treatment plant. This the cement that has been cured this way, you know, will be good for these years. That's a powerful, powerful thing to, in a sense, reach into the future. And there's all kinds of things built into it, of course, but that's a powerful, powerful thing. And perhaps some of what I'm doing is looking at patterns in life and saying, because some of these patterns that Peterson and Verveke are talking about are some of the most important patterns in life. And part of what is, in all defense of pastors and philosophers and theologians, life is really complex, and it's more complex than a bridge or a container in a wastewater treatment plant. That's a pretty complex thing.
Yeah.
But life, as there's so many variables and there's so, it's such a dynamic environment.
To go back to the bridges, or sorry, the crosses that you bear, you know, sometimes bridges fail, and you know, sometimes they're disasters.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bridges built by engineers.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's very true. So we got a few more minutes. If you got anything else on your list you really want to get in.
So I'm just going to kind of go through, because I want to make sure if it is something that it's something I really want to talk about. I guess, you know, one thing that I do want to throw out just real quick is just how helpful, you know, Peterson was for me in being able to become the person that I am, right? And I listen to his stories and I hear him get choked up and I'm like, yes, like I'm there, like I'm that person, you know, like how helpful it was and just how helpful, you know, you have been as well. And I guess to go back to, because I did say I wanted to come back to something here, is this idea of, and just, you know, something that I want to promote, I guess, as myself and as a teacher, is this idea of the family and just this family structure and keeping, you know, and what Peterson talks about in that video that I said I constantly go back to, that, you know, I'm not leaving you no matter what, and how important that is, and thinking about, you know, all the way back to the beginning of our conversation when I was saying, you know, the boy that's at the train tracks and he is trying to make that decision of who he needs to go with. And, you know, I think for a long time, I really, I let, you know, cause you know, just, I, I'm to, you know, full disclosure, right, you know, with my parents having, you know, being divorced, and then having to make tough decisions, and then ended up, you know, I feel making a decision that wasn't a good one. But, you know, and looking at myself as that child, but again, you can't look at yourself as the child, right? Like, it was a child that was put in an impossible decision that they had to make. And, you know, so looking back at it now, I have to look at it as an adult, right? I have to look at it as like, I shouldn't have been put in that position. But, you know, I me and my sister made a decision to run away. We actually ran away from my mom's house all the way. We ran all the way to Montana, and we went to go live with my dad. And,
wow.
And it was a very, you know, we got there and we were promised, you know, the benevolent king, you know, so this is again, where I say Peterson was very helpful, because it just putting a narrative to it, putting a structure to it, and being able to use that to find my way out, right? It was very, very helpful. So, you know, I was promised a benevolent king, but we got the tyranny, right? And there was a lot of drug use. There was, you know, my brother was on drugs and those things, and it was just not a good scenario.
Wow. Right?
It was not a good scenario in the way that, you know, everything kind of defragmented, right? I went into the chaos. I went into the void. It was, you know, how I described it for myself. You know, and so moving forward as an adult and moving forward from there, you know, like, I don't need to give you all the details, but I just want to kind of stay with this overlying narrative. You know, as an adult, it was, how can I get out of this? And I guess I wanted myself to be that child. And that's where I, you know, the Peter Pan really comes in. There was this really big attractiveness, you know, like I like to Peter Pan, like, that I wanted to be Peter Pan, you know, I wanted to, you know, like, and that's where, I guess, you know, why I wanted to talk about it in the beginning, because it was, I didn't want to have to live out a narrative. And I guess I wanted to see myself as a victim, you know? And so that's where I also kind of get into this, you know, when Peterson talks about don't be a victim and those kinds of things. And it's, so that really was impactful for me as well. I guess one of the things that I really wanted to touch on, because I wanted to challenge one of Peterson's ideas if I can, because he talks about Jonah, and he talks about Jonah and the whale, and just, you know, Jonah, he didn't want to go there because he just didn't want to go to that city because that was a hard task. But really, like, what the story, you know, because our pastor went over this, was no, Jonah didn't want to go there because he didn't want to save those people.
That's right.
And that was what was really, you know, I didn't want to save my dad. I didn't want to save him from the belly of the whale. I didn't want to, you know, forgive him. I didn't, you know, so that was, you know, a lot more of what it was for me. And I just being able to go down there and find him and find my dad and find, you know, all psychological, obviously, but, and forgive him and forgive myself for, you know, making that decision, even though I was a kid, and, you know, being able to, I guess, you know, kind of come out of that and to rediscover who my dad was and to build this new relationship with him. And to, you know, I love what I've been listening to Verbeke, and this idea of agape, right? And you know, that forgiveness, that I'm, you know, loving my dad out of the person who I thought he was, or who, you know, I experienced, into the person that I know he can be and the person that he is becoming. And, you know, I've just built this relationship with him that, I don't know. Like, I don't think I would have ever been able to without, you know, listening to Peterson more and, you know, having that narrative structure to be able to, to go there. So yeah, it was very powerful for me. So that's my last little bit I wanted to share. And I hope that kind of ties everything together.
It really does. Well, it really does. And it makes the decisions that you've made, mm-hmm. of a commitment to a woman, and to a child, and to a career, and to a church, it makes it all the more courageous, because many people who have suffered what you've suffered have avoided, and they have played Peter Pan and Mr. Nobody, and they haven't chosen. When I was in seminary, a theologian named Lewis Smedes, he eventually taught at Calvin College for a while, went on to teach at Fuller Seminary. He came back to Calvin Seminary and gave some lectures, style lectures on commitment. And those were incredibly important in my life, because they really challenged me to make that commitment, to make that choice, to take that goal, and to define my future by that goal. And no, you're the last filling in of your story a bit really does help flesh out the whole conversation, because now I can much more clearly see what I can far better understand the temptation to avoid and evade, which is exactly what many people who have lived through some of what you've lived through have done, because it feels safer. But that safety is illusory, because it is in the avoiding to choose that you actually you're not going to find meaning. Because you're not setting that goal. The process of selecting a goal is a process of choice. And that's, Peterson has a lot of different elements in him, but one of the elements that sometimes gets forgotten is his existentialism. And existentialists are about, you know, taking that, you know, defining themselves by their choices. And that's deeply important. And you're right about Jonah and the whale, because if Peterson, you know, if he's brought a lot of fresh things out of the Bible with his biblical series, but there's a lot he misses simply because he hasn't been able to avail himself of the rich tradition. And the story of Jonah, and it's plain in the text, if you read all four chapters and not just one and two, that he wants to judge, he wants Nineveh to go down in flames. And
he knows that God will save them. He knows that, you know, God has that power, and that he's going, that if he goes there, then, they're going to be saved, but he doesn't want them to be saved.
That's right. His complaint, unlike many people today who say, oh, the God of the Bible is too cruel, Jonah looked at God and said, no, he's too merciful. The world would be better if he, you know, if he would show more stick. And there's a lot of people actually who very much believe that. Their anger with God is because God was negligent, and it betrays and illuminates a lot of how they believe, what they believe people are, and how they believe people must be treated. And it's a pretty dark vision. Oh, this has been good. So I'm really glad. Yeah. I'm really glad that you reached out. And
I'm glad I finally did too. There was, you know, that little part of me where, I just didn't know if I'd have enough to bring, or I just didn't know how much I'd be able to add to the conversation. But as I kind of thought about it more, it's not more about, you know, that, I don't know. I wanted to embody it, right? I wanted to be a part of the conversation. I wanted to, you know, to join in and to have that conversation. So I finally got over that. And
good for you. Good for you. And again, it's choosing, it's taking. Yeah. And that's another thing that's good from Peterson. A lot of the good advice he's given is do something, you know, act. Don't sit here and spin. Act, commit, decide, pursue. And there is the old adage, you know, history favors the bold. And so good for you for reaching out and scheduling, and good for you for committing to a wife, committing to a church, having a child. And I believe that your choices will bless you, even if they're hard, as you go into the future. So good for you. Well, thank you, Lee. I will send you this video, and you know, you can decide if you'd be willing to let me share it.
I'm happy to have you share it. I want people to see you in here, and
Go ahead. Real good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.